It's me, Lily, a frog. I live in a pond, and I love to tell stories. This episode is special because it marks Tales from the Lily Pad's third birthday. Woo! Hootie was first broadcast as episode one of Tales from the Lily Pad in October 2014, and since then, more bedtime stories have been told to more kids than I ever imagined possible from my little lily pad. Hootie is by Marlene Werfel, and she'd like to dedicate the story to her kids who were much whittler 3 years ago and who she remembers so fondly bouncing up and down and screaming, yay, yay, the first time that she broadcast episode one of Tales from the Lily Pad in their minivan. Hootie is a little northern pygmy owl who was hatched in the Rocky Mountains, in a cozy hole in an old tree full of twigs and leaves and moss with his sisters. He had two sisters, Hootie the Northern Pygmy Owl did, so counting him, there are three tiny owlets in this particular nest, in this particular tree, in this particular story. Their names are Eboo, who is the biggest little owl, very fluffy, though no bigger than your own hand, and Bijou, who is the littlest pygmy owl and who would fit in the palm of your own little hand. She has golden eyes and she is scared of nothing at all. And Hootie, who is the one in the middle and who is terribly afraid of the daylight. At first, whenever daylight shone into the hole in the tree, Hootie would just hide his face in his mother's downy feathers or under his own little wing or behind his sister's backs. And that was fine. The little owls didn't need to do anything at all but cuddle together in the dark, safe hole in the tree while their mom watched over them and their dad flew out over the melting spring snow to bring back the delicious food he hunted for them by day and by night. He brought them so much food that they grew and grew every day. At dawn, they would peek out of the hole and see their mother perched on a branch, watching, watching. At dusk, they would peek out of the hole and see their father returning over the spiky evergreens of the Rocky Mountains with a mouse in his talons for them. And during the day, they would huddle together, bellies full, dozing while the sun warmed the old tree they lived in. The more they grew, the smaller the hole they lived in seemed, and the further their mother would perch from them on a branch, and the longer it would be before their increasingly tired and thin father returned, his feathers beginning to fray and fall out to drop his prey in their nest. One particularly warm day, Eboo and Bijou didn't just peek out of the nest, they hopped right out onto the nearest branch. And there they sat, perching still and quiet as the sun grew stronger and higher in the sky, only their little fluffy heads turning this way and that. How lovely the world is, sighed Bijou, while their mother hooted softly nearby. But when Hootie hopped out of the hole onto a branch, well, he was dazzled by all the sunlight, and he was awfully confused by the number of new things he saw. There was a stream that made a hissing sound as it rushed by. It sounded like a wildcat to him. There were leaves that rustled like the applause of thousands in the branches above and all around Hootie. There were squirrels shouting at each other in the treetops and zipping so dizzyingly quickly up, down, and around tree trunks that Hootie simply couldn't say how many of them there were, just that they seemed terribly loud and awfully sharp and bossy and everywhere. Sunlight drenched the landscape, bouncing back at Hootie from the water, glaring off of the new spring leaves, the bright drifting clouds and the rushing water. It hurt his eyes, all that light. It made his tummy ache, and he felt sure he'd fall right over. So Hootie hurried back into the hole, and instead of watching the world out in the bright, scary daylight, Hootie watched his sisters watching the world. And this is what he saw. One day, his mother plummeted down from the tree to kill a vole. A vole is very much like a mouse scurrying below. Owls eat voles. But instead of carrying the vole up into the nest for Hootie and his sisters, their mother called to them to fly down and help themselves to dinner. Well, Bijou wasn't shy about it. She dropped right out of the tree branch and started feasting. She was always hungry for vole, but Ibu needed a bit of convincing. Her mother beckoned, but she hesitated a long while before finally she dropped down to dinner. And when she did, it was mostly already eaten. Poor Ibu. And poor Hootie. Hootie didn't leave the nest at all. He just watched and waited. It took his sisters a long time to figure out how to fly back up into the nest, flapping up by one branch at a time, and he was glad he didn't need to bother with that. All the same, his belly was rumbly and empty, and he waited for his father to bring a vole, but that night, his father didn't come back to the hole in the tree at all. And Hootie felt his tummy ache for food while his mom and his sisters slept satisfied. Another day, Hootie watched while his mother trapped a vole on the ground, but she didn't kill it. She called for her owlets to fly down and do the job themselves. Ibu plummeted to the ground like she knew just what to do, but when her mother let go of the vole, it ran away into some juniper bushes. Bijou tried to catch the next vole, but he got away too. They tried all day, his mother calling to Hootie to join them, but he stayed put, except to hop out a little ways onto a branch and then to hop back inside until finally Ibu killed a vole with her own little beak and talons, and she joyfully called out to her sister and brother and mother that it was dinner time. Hootie thought that vole looked so good, and he was so hungry that he almost dropped down to join them on the soft, mossy ground for dinner. When he saw, out of the corner of his eye, a low, slinking shape skulking towards his feasting sisters, Hootie swiveled his head around, and there was a blonde mother cougar with a blonde cougar cub at her side. Both were staring at Ibu and Bijou, moving ever so quietly, so slowly, and Hootie knew that the mother was teaching her baby cougar how to hunt for lunch, and that she thought his sisters looked like a good lunch. Hootie let out a loud shriek, and in an instant, his mother came storming down from the branches above, flapping her wings madly at the cougars. There was another shrill cry. It was Hootie's father flying down fast towards the cougars from the opposite direction. He came near the mother cougar, so near she swatted at him with her sharp paw, but she missed. And then he swooped back up into the air and down at her again, talons spread. In all that confusion, Hootie's sisters flew back up to safety in the branches above. And that night, they all slept together warm and safe in the hole in the tree. The cougars long since gone off to find lunch elsewhere. But Hootie couldn't sleep. His belly was rumbling and growling. The moon was full, but Hootie wasn't afraid of moonlight the way he was of sunlight, and he hopped out onto a branch thinking of his father. How magnificent he was when he flew down from the trees to protect his family, and how much he missed him. Hootie looked up into the stars and imagined his father was up there like that, watching over him, like a twinkling star. Just then he felt, he didn't hear, he just felt a silent whoosh, and there was his father on the branch right beside him with the plumpest vole in his beak, which he gave to Hootie. After Hootie had eaten, his father, who was looking hale and hearty once more, told Hootie that if Hootie was going to survive, he would need to use all of the lessons he had learned from watching. For owls are great watchers, and that is one of their strongest powers, and he would need to use all of his owl instincts. For owl instincts are true and wise, and Hootie would have to find the courage to fly into the light and find food on his own, for that is what owls must do. Your mother and sisters will be flying away soon to make their own nests, new nests, and you'll be on your own, Hootie, said his father. Nobody will bring you another vole. Before you are too weak from hunger, you've got to make your own way, Hootie. And then his father flew away up, up into the stars. Hootie felt terribly alone, even with his sisters right beside him, and he knew deep in his owl self that his father's words were true. The very next dawn, he watched his sisters fly off and away over the evergreens and into the Rocky Mountain sunrise. Hootie knew what he had to do. Hootie hopped onto a branch, squinted his eyes tight shut to block out that brazen yellow sunlight, squinted his eyes tight shut to block out that brazen yellow sunlight. He thought of the beauty of starlight instead, and he stretched his wings out. He sailed into the day looking for voles. He sailed and he sailed. Then he looked for a place to perch, but none of them looked quite like the tree he knew, and he didn't see a single vole. All he saw were meadow flowers and water falling dazzlingly down the mountain cliffs. Well, he saw a moose scraping the bark off a golden willow tree with her strong teeth, but that didn't look delicious, and he saw a terrifying silver fox pounce on a rabbit. Hooty flew and flew and looked, but he didn't see anything that looked safe or delicious until he was so tired. He didn't think his wings could flap one more wing beat, and just then, his wide amber-colored eye settled on the most beautiful shade of darkness he had ever seen. Was it a cave? Was it a hole in the ground? Hooty didn't know, but he knew he was tired, and he knew he was scared and needed to rest. So he let himself sail gently down onto the patch of darkness, and he buried his face deep in the beautiful absence of sunlight there, and he breathed deeply and let his breath return to him, and his heart stopped beating so madly. And then the darkness spoke. "Hello," it said. "My name is Blueberry. I'm a black bear. What are you, and why are you hiding in my fur?" "A bear?" thought Hooty. "How horribly scary." But he didn't cry out. He was too tired. "Oh, please be kind," he said softly. "I'm just a little northern pygmy owl. My name is Hooty. Please don't hurt me. I'm just such a very little owl. There's no meat on my bones at all. And I'm so, so tired." "Oh, a northern pygmy owl," said Blueberry. "Well, I don't know anything about northern pygmy owls. In fact, I've never even heard of them, but I do know all about tired. I haven't slept a wink all summer. I'm a black bear, and all we're supposed to do is eat and eat and eat. I like that quite a bit, but come fall, we're supposed to curl up in a dark den or a cave and sleep. But I just can't do that because, well, I'm so horribly, terribly afraid." And she opened her beautifully liquid black eyes wide and said, "Of the dark." "Afraid of the dark?" asked Hooty. "Afraid of the dark? Why would anybody be afraid of the dark? It's so comforting and calming and quiet. I love the dark." "You aren't afraid of the dark?" asked Blueberry. "Not one bit," answered Hooty. "And you aren't afraid of the daylight?" "Afraid of the daylight?" asked Blueberry. "Why would anybody be afraid of the daylight? It's so clear and honest and fun." Hooty and Blueberry made a pact to be best friends and to help each other when they were scared. And that's what they did all through the summer and into the fall, too. During the dawn and daylight hours, Hooty would perch on Blueberry's head to hunt. He felt very safe and he got very good at it. He became strong and quick. If there was danger, one roar and swat from Blueberry would fend it off. If Hooty became overwhelmed with all the everythingness of daylight, he would just bury his little face in Blueberry's fur and it would all disappear until he felt safe and sure again. The only thing he had to watch for was Blueberry's tendency to race splashing into a stream after a fish, because Hooty really hated to get his feathers wet, but Blueberry really loved fishing. At dusk and during the dark night, Hooty would cuddle in Blueberry's cave with her right up next to Blueberry's left ear and tell her nice stories whenever she had trouble sleeping. If she would wake afraid in the dark, he would sing her a little song until she fell back asleep. And if there was a strange noise, Hooty would peek his head out of the cave and report to Blueberry what it was. Just a rabbit rustling in the leaves, just the wind in the branches. They were best friends and they grew so much together. One day, Hooty and Blueberry were racing to eat the same dragonfly, but Hooty got to it first. He swallowed it up, then, uh-oh, Blueberry got to it second, and he felt her jaws close all around him. Well, Hooty shrieked, and Blueberry sneezed him out onto the forest floor. Hootie was all damp and not very happy about the incident. After that, he decided never to hunt anything that Blueberry was after, too. When winter came and the Rocky Mountains were covered with deep snow, and the branches of trees hung heavy with snow, and there was scarcely any daylight at all, Blueberry slept soundly in her cave, like bears are supposed to, and Hootie hardly had to tell her any stories or coo any songs. When he was hungry, he perched in a tall tree just outside the den and waited for a vole to scurry by. One day, he caught a plump vole in his talons, and he felt a silent whoosh above him. But when he looked up, all he saw were the twinkling stars. Come spring, Blueberry woke up horribly hungry but happy to see Hootie, and Hootie realized that he wasn't staying close to Blueberry anymore because he needed to, but because he wanted to. And that spring, when a northern pygmy owl named Maple Line fluttered onto Hootie's branch and told him that she was a ferocious and skilled raptor, but that she'd really like to hide in a hole for a while, warming a clutch of eggs, and would Hootie do the hunting while she did that? Hootie decided he'd like that, and he said yes. Hootie and Maple Line hatched 5 little northern pygmy owls named Dash, Spruce, Boggs, who wasn't afraid of anything, Slushy, and Little Darkly, who had lovely slate-colored feathers and was terribly afraid of Dandelion Fluff. The end. Thanks for listening. You know, it's not writers who make stories come to life. It's the people who read them or listen to them that make them come to life. So thanks.